So, gentlemen, we begin a new post-Tisha B'Av year, which Tisha B'Av somehow has managed to extend itself. But, here we are in Yud B'Av, and our daf today, we got up to the two dots on Kuf Hei, the top of the daf. So, Katav Ot Achat Notrikon. We had in the Mishnah Machloket about what happens if you write a letter and indicate that it's a shorthand. So you make a little dot on top, or you make a little psik on the side, which is a recent minhag. What would be the din? Rav Yeshua ben Beter Mechaye, because he follows the information content rather than the actual object of the ketiva. V'chachamim potri. Rabbi Yochanan, Mishum Rabbi Yosef ben Zimra, once we're on the topic, and you'll notice that this has been quite a lot of our topic in this parak, which involves the dinim of Ketiva, the remuzim of various notrikuns, and even the olive bait itself. Where else would you expect to find it but in dinim of Ketiva? So says Rabbi Yochanan, Mishum Rabbi Yosef ben Zimra, this is one of these very esoteric continuations. Minayin alashin notrikun min haTorah. Now everybody who reads that can see that it clearly means Av netatecha leumot, Bachur netatecha leumot. Hamon means Hamon chaviv netatecha leumot, Melach netatecha leumot, Vatik netatecha leumot, Neeman netatecha leumot. And so it's quite clear that it's written Beloshen Notri. Rabbi Yochanan didei Omar, Rabbi Yochanan, his own maimer, not quoted this time in the name of Rabbi Yosef ben Zimra, is the word Anochi itself that was said at Kabbalat HaTorah is itself a notrikun, which implies Ana Nafshi Ketivat Yahavi, that I put my soul into the writing that I gave. That's the Hasidic interpretation. No. These are remosim. I mean, they're getting more. Yeah. No. I'm saying that the Hasidic interpretation that it's an insertion of my soul kevayachol doesn't necessarily need to be the explanation of ana nafshi, which would simply mean I did myself give you this ketiva. But in the context of anochi, it's taken to mean my innermost self kevayachol. Rabbanan amrei amira ni'ima ketiva yehiva. I have given you the sweetness of these words in writing. Ikidami anochi lemafreya. You can darshan anochi from end to front, much as we were doing in the olive bit, which is a ketiva. This is yahivet ketiva. I gave you a ketiva in which ne'emanim amareha, which all of its amarot are integrous. Devei Rabbi Natan Amrei, another example of a clear-cut notrikun in which the word isn't really fully understandable without it. Ki yarat haderech linagdi. What exactly is yarat haderech linagdi in the story of Bil'am? The word yarat doesn't even make sense exactly. What is the aton trying to say? So we understand that to be basically a word that comprises what it was that happened to the aton, which is what she's reporting. Yara, she sensed a fear that was undefined to her. Ra'ata, at which point she saw something. Natata, which caused her to turn aside. And the Devei Rabbi Shmuel Tana, what is the meaning of the word Carmel? Because there's, I mean, this is already a Chiyuv D'oraisa Carmel, and it never explains what, where do we find the word Carmel exactly, which has come to mean Carmel in English as well. It means something which is not quite solid, it's still soft and fresh and sticky and gooey, which is exactly what it means over here in the dinim of the Mincha Ta'omer, that the grain is still kar male. It's like a pillow that's filled. So it's fluffy, soft. In other words, the grain hasn't dried yet. Normally, you wouldn't have processed it, but for the Omer, you make it nevuv luchot, you parch the grain, then you use it in that form. Rav Acha bar Yaakov Omer, we find also a lashon notrikun in David's closing words to Shlomo, when he's talking about taking care of Shimi ben Gera. He says, "V'hu kilalani kilala nimretzet." Now, what exactly is the meaning of the nimretzet? The nimretzet is a notrikun about what it was he was saying about me, which I'd rather not openly say, but he was saying, "Noefu, Moavihu, Rotseyaku, Sorerhu, Toevahu." Those were some of the gentler words. So in any event, just so you should know, take care of them good. The truth is that the Parshat HaPshat of Nimretzet, I think, is absolutely beautiful. Parshat HaPshat is like this. When David was escaping and Shimi came and he's cursing him. So David's friend said, this guy's a dog, we'll just go and we'll crush him. I mean, we're not sit here and listen to this garbage. So David says, shut up. Kadosh Baruch Hu obviously told him to curse me. This is all happening as part of the horrible things that are happening. Like they're starting out taking revenge on him. He's part of this whole story. If that's the case, so how does he come at the end, all of a sudden to turn around? But there he's talking big. When it comes to the end of his life, just get the guy no matter what. It's unbelievable. So the Pshat is, we find exactly the same thing by Paro. Paro was set aside to do what he did to Klal Yisrael. But, however, because he was Maksha, you're asked it, but you didn't have to get into it. Like, oh, he really put his heart and soul into it. That wasn't part of his job. So, for his job, you want to kill him for what he said. No, that's his job. But the way he said it, he should be killed. Sorry?
Why does that require the time to end up in
Mount? No, because obviously he said, he promised everybody he's not going to, otherwise he never would have been able to undo, he did incredible things to undo that that rebellion, otherwise there never would have been a go, everybody would have lived in fear. It's like an East Germany today, where they're releasing the files of who was basically informers, you know, to the Stasi. What do they call it? I don't want to call it. Was it the Stasi? Was it the Stasi? Are you there? He needed instantly to lay to rest. The most important thing that he did to do that, of course, was his show at the death of Avshalom, which was absolutely astounding, to the point where his own general said, you mean you'd rather we would all drop dead as long as he would be alive? That's exactly what he needed to convey. That way anybody that was on the other side felt he wasn't on the other side. Basically, David would have been happy for them doing. It was an absolutely brilliant move. And all of the Hanhaga that he did for them, it was amazing. You know, to often recognize the brilliance of David's Berucha and the things that he did in order to... Basically, yes. Nobody felt that, you know, it's not that I'm angry. I mean, you supported my son. It's all the same to me. Continues the Gemara. Another good, beautiful example is when the Shvatim were responding to Yosef, and they say when they're dragged back after the Binyamin story. I mean, you could say man daber man itzadak. I mean, we have nothing to say, but you've got to be saying somewhere in what you're saying that this is insane, that it's all a. Where did they say it? The word nitzadak stands for Nechonim Anachnu, Tzadikim Anachnu, Torim Anachnu, Dakim Anachnu, Kedoshim Anachnu. None of this is true.
Look, the Heilige Mishnah.
Hakotev shtei otiyot b'shtei ha'alamot, achat shacharit v'achat ben ha'arbaim, Rabbi Gamliel mechayev v'chachamim potrim. Somebody who, here we finally get into the question of a yediya in between a shiur. I wrote one letter, and then you found out that it was Shabbos. Or you found out that Ketiva is awesome. Forgot, and later that day write another letter, obviously in a way in which it's possible to be mechaber them, which may include the Achas Kutzveri and Achas Kutzveri. So we have a machlokas, and this is the famous machlokas that we've had throughout. We've continually discussed what it is that Rebbe Gamliel holds about Yediyah L'Chatzi Shiur. And we said, according to Rebbe Gamliel, who holds in Yediyah L'Chatzi Shiur, this is the Mishnah in which that is clear. Because Rebbe Gamliel is saying you're chayiv even though you had a Yediyah between. Apparently that Yediyah, because it's not mechayiv you a chatat, is not considered to be a hefset between the two actions. And therefore it's meaningless. So they remain mechubarim together. Whereas had you had a Yediyah of something that was mechayiv you a chatat, then the second act would have been unrelated to the first, and would have been mechayiv you a second chatat if it was a shir, or it wouldn't have been able to be mitzarek if it wasn't a shir. So here is actually the source of what we've been saying all through the Masechet. I'll leave the Ram Leel to Savadeh and Yediyah L'Chatzi Shir. This is where he says it. Now what's interesting over here is the Achat Shacharit V'Achat Bein Harbayim. Because, I mean, what's the point? I mean, we've been talking about people with Alzheimer's all along. I mean, when we have to excuse it, one was in the morning, one was in the evening. And Rashi uses this as a basis of a tremendous chiddush, in which he says the amount of time that passes by in which a person would normally have found out that it's Shabbos is called a yediyah, even if he didn't. So in other words, it's talking, going Rashi, is two different things. Either b'shtei halamot, or achat shacharit v'achat ben arbayim, which is the equivalent of b'shtei halamot. Tosa says, I mean, where does this come from? And then why didn't it say what that shear is? I mean, what do you mean, what time shacharit, you know? Is that the gross kriya shema, or is it looking at Rome's kriya shema? How can Mishnah say something like that without exactly a shear?
No. Shouldn't
say
Mari
first. What's that?
No.
Okay. So Tosa doesn't like that bichlon. Furthermore, he asks from the case of achas betzipori and achas betferia. It takes time to get from tzipori to tferia. So according to Rashi Shita, that time itself is considered to be a yediyah. Why didn't that? So you already involved the machlokas of Gamliel and the Chachamim. Said we just reported as if, well, no, it's no problem. You could be mitzarefin. Maybe you can't. Maybe yesh yediyah lachas yishir. Like the Chachamim say over here, they say you're potter. How come all of a sudden over there was stoma? I'll leave the Gamliel. Very, very unlikely. And this is the only reason that it says shakers bechadar. This is simply to indicate strongly to you how meaningful this idea was. I mean, is this, you're going to put together something in the morning and something in the evening when I found out in between? Yeah, exactly. Because we're talking about a technicality. We're not talking about how it appears to you to be one act. Bottom line is, if you hold any idea like that's a keyword, this is one act. And that the Mishnah is trying to strengthen the observation that you shouldn't be troubled by the fact that you knew in between, or that a lot of time passed in between, and that in human terms you would generally look at this as a completely different act. It's irrelevant. Rabbi Joshua, you've been, oh, we didn't do it. The Maika Miflagay, I spoke about it, but didn't read the Gemara. The Maika Miflagay, Rabbi Gamliel Savar, Ein Yediyah L'Chatzi Shiur. Therefore, the knowledge that it was Shabbat in between is not Mechalek between the two acts, and you're left with a single act. Forget about how much time passes. Rabbanan Savare, Yesh Yediyah L'Chatzi Shiur, forget about how little time passes. The fact that you found out in between turns it into two separate acts, which cannot be mitzuraf le'inyan chiyuv chatan. Hadran alacha boner. Now, before we start this parak, I just want to give a brief introduction to the wool working process. This parak actually deals with both issues of cloth making, either cloth that's being made out of wool or other natural materials, or the process of the tzeda, or, which was also used for cloth making. And that's basically what we're going to be meyached ourselves in on this part. Now, the thing is that there's a lot of separate steps, as we've already seen, in the weaving process, each one of which is a separate milacha. And that's one of those things in which, as we said, everything that was specific in the Mishkan, we look at specifically, that we could have sort of subsumed everything under the general category because of our given of Lamatet Melachot. Again, the way that we discussed this back at the original Mishnah of the Lamatet Melachot and the Ramazan to where the Lamatet Melachot come from. But in any event, let's think about the issue when it comes to weaving. First of all, in order to weave, we obviously need threads. In order to have threads, we obviously need for them to be spun, or else they're just loose wool. In order to get the loose wool in order to spin, we obviously have to comb it out. In order to have it combed so that it's spinnable, it also can't be matted and filthy, in which case we need to willy it, we need to bang it, get rid of all of that garbage in it so that it can be combed. Otherwise, you can't even do that. Those issues have, there's also a side point which you could say, well, maybe you could do without, which is the leavening process, which is the washing process, which is actually very much important in order to get the willying done. The problem that you're going to have in weaving is quite clear. In order to weave a cloth of any significant width, you're going to have to do a horrific job every time of taking your weft thread, your RAF thread, and sticking it up through one and down through the other and up through the next and down through the other, and there may be 100,000 threads in a large loom. And you understand that to do one line is going to take you all day. So that's not a very good way to weave. Therefore, even in the most primitive cultures, every culture developed a way in which it would be possible to weave without doing all of that horrific work. And the simple idea is to make sure that you can pull the threads, alternate threads in alternate directions. Let's say one up and one down, so that you have 1, 3, 5, 7, and so on, going up, and 2, 4, 6, 8 going down, which then leave you a hole. If you put your thread through that hole, then you switch them around, you've got a whole thing that only took you a minute. And that's the principle. The question is how to manage that, and different cultures develop different kind of looms for different purposes. Obviously, the most effective before you get a powered loom is what you also want to do is you want to be able to roll the cloth. You don't want to just have the loom as big as the cloth that you're actually weaving is, because then it gets completely unwieldy. I mean, how big a loom can you have? So what you do is you put the threads on a round piece of wood that you can roll as you make the cloth. That way you can make miles and miles of cloth until it simply gets too big to sit on the roll. Okay, but how do you move your threads? Basically, in the most sophisticated loom, which you could run with your feet, you would put the threads on what's called a heddle. And here's a nice picture, which is very cadaver. Actually, there is a loom in the Rovithen, at least there was some years ago. It's not there anymore. Oh, well, it was a beautiful loom, really beautiful loom. All right. Here is a basic loom that's run by the feet over here. Yeah, I'm sorry I didn't make any copies. Okay, you're rolling the thread. Obviously, we're expanding the distance between the threads. You can get the idea. You're rolling the thread onto here. You've got these two heddles.
What's the word? What did you say?
Heddle. These are heddles, right? Okay. So the actual threads are passed through the alternate holes here. Each one of those holes is called a bait near. The little box that holds them, the square that holds them itself, which is the harness, is called the near. And the small holes that are simply rings that are attached on top and on bottom are called the bait near. At least this is Rashi's pshat. I don't think there's an argument. I'll explain to you what the argument seems to be. Now, you'll notice that each one of these moves independently. Each one goes up while the other goes down. They're connected to the foot pedal over here. So as you press one thing, that one goes down, pulling the other one up. Now, when you pass through the shti, which is the warp threads, so the long threads, each one of them is passed through one of these holes. Okay, all the odd threads are passed through one of the nirim. In separate batenir, obviously, each thread in a batenir. The setting it up is the malach, is the first malach of the batenir. The oseh, that's the oseh shleimir, that's what the setup is. So the setup itself is considered to be a malach, because it's in fact, even though it doesn't make any cloth, but it itself is a creative act that will allow cloth to be made. So all the odd threads go through one, each thread being put through a different bayit, different little ring, and all the even threads go through the other one. Then as you press right over here on this foot pedal, one goes up, the other one goes down, and you press on the other foot pedal, and then the opposite happens. Each time one goes up and one goes down, it creates a space, as you can see here, in which the green threads are being pulled down, the red threads are being pulled up. The next time it'll be the other way around. You then put the shuttle, the buchiar, which we've talked about before, you throw the shuttle in between. If it's a long loom, then obviously you've got somebody on the other side to catch it. And you would have two weavers that would be doing the weaving job. If it's a short loom, then you get trained to do it yourself. One hand throws it this way, the other hand catches it. There's no way to avoid it. You've got to get that thread in between these threads here, and then pull the other direction, in order to complete one line of weave. After which, this piece over here, which is a comb essentially, which is called the kirus, is forced down, smashing the orev against the sea, and it compacts it and makes the web, the weave, tight.
Against the one that was breathing.
So it pulls it towards
against itself.
What do you mean?
Pushes it down to be as close to the previous run of the shoulder.
The kirus pushes it down.
So it pulls towards it. It pulls towards it since the weave is being built
up.
It's
closer to where the material already is.
Right.
So after you've... What's that?
Presumably you're standing... Where are you standing when you're doing it? You're sitting on this side of it, correct?
You're sitting over here. You have to be able to throw the buchia. Okay, now any other system basically works the same way. This is a fancy system. But I mean, you can have simple systems. You can have systems like that, which you simply separate the threads with a piece of wood, which can be twisted either this way or that way, and then somebody slides through the buchia in between. As you open this up, the threads are forced apart. This is very simple. You got another person.
You have two.
Yeah. What do you mean two?
Two pieces that...
No, here, that's what... Yeah, well, I mean, yes, but they're connected. But you don't need to pull, and then you reverse it.
Yeah.
No. Or you've got the home loom, I think they have a nice picture here. You've got a vertical loom, which is very common, which Rashi keeps referring to, which is used in the home. So this doesn't have the whole fancy setup. You basically will use a piece of wood, and then you use, instead of having the actual kirus, you have what's known as a sword kirus. You push down, but it has to be fitted. You see that sharp edge? It has to be fitted in between. So this is like a, you know, this is much more primitive. Yeah, people do this on the ground because it's small, it's easy to control. Obviously, you have only so much width that you can take care of on your own and hold like this. No, kipas are not woven. They're knitted. Yeah, that's an entirely different type of thing. Okay, so now, let me also, by the way, he's got some nice pictures over here of the earlier process. So he's got the malabane. These are like very old, drawings from centuries ago.
What book is that?
It's called Maaseh Oreg. It's the book on Ariga, on Dinim of Shabbos. There's all the different sheets and so on. So you put it into the bleaching pool. You wash it out in the fresh water over here. And you can see the woman doing that. So that's the malabane. And then you have the minapes. And here's a picture, again, an ancient picture of Niputz, which the wool is put down on this on these spring-type things, and you smash against it, and that way all of the dirt and vegetable matter, matted hair, and so on, falls out through the bottom, and you're left with things which can then be... there's a shiloh, whether you have to do it by hand also, which is Niputz.
Separating
the fibers.
This is not
by hand. There's three different sheetahs of Niputz. So the Niputz, this is the Ramban's Niputz, the Niputz by hand like this, feeling it your way, is the closing of it, that's Rashi's Niputz, and then you have the actual, what we call combing, is Niputz according to other sheetahs that are brought by the Meiri. But okay, but this is all part of the first part, which we didn't talk about. Okay, but the Gemara is really going to concentrate on Ariga because the others are pretty straightforward. So Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Ha'oreg Shilosha Chutim B'tchila V'achat Al Ha'arig Chayav. You have now, says Rabbi Eliezer, you're starting to weave. In order to get a start that's going to hold together, you're going to need to pass through three times your buchia. You've got three threads now that have gone in to the weft, three weft threads that are running across. And then you've got a start. But if you've already started, even if you only add one, you've done a significant arig. Of course, we know this readily as a shita from before. His shita is that any malacha that's mitkayemet because of what's there before, such as writing a letter next to another letter, then that's also a malacha. The Rabbanan, of course, we know, argue on this. not true. Bein b'tchila, bein b'sof, shirosh shtei chutim. It's never more than two chutim. There's always the same melechet ariga, which is defined by the theory of, okay, let's take this and pretend that this is what you got. Is this a meaningful creation? That's all. We're not interested in the context of the ariga.
Never more than two threads or never less than two threads?
You don't need more to be chayav.
You don't need more.
Yeah.
Two threads in one direction. Two threads either
shtibah
or
enter. No. Along the, depending how much shtibah you have, but along the shtibah, we'll see what the shear is of the, how many threads of shtibah you need. He's not talking about that. That's a separate shaila. What's the width? He's talking about along now the length of your ariga.
Two threads. That's
if you put in
two threads, right? Along.
Those are shati threads. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about you have your shati threads here, and you're now weaving. So to weave, you have to put in your aray thread.
And the weft is what you pass through each time. That's called the weft.
That's called the weft. The other one is called the warp. That's right. What you're going to be warping. You know, up
like?
And down, up
so
and
down. Shesi and aray or weft and warp?
Shesi and aray. Shesi and Arev are warp and weft.
What difference
does it make if you have the one and you put, if you have a shti or the Arev and you put in the other? What difference does it make? Because you can't weave by putting in shti, sweetie. You can only weave by putting in Arev. You can't add a shti thread to a weave. You can only add an Arev thread to a weave. How are you going to add a shti thread to a weave? It's closed by the Arev that was previously there, right? So the only way to weave is in the direction of the length of the material. So, furthermore, ha'oseh shtei batei nirim. If you make two of these batei nirim, now, making two of these batei nirim means that you have, the pashtus means that it's sufficient to set up a loom or any other type of weave, such as a basket weave and so on, which we're going to discuss, in such a way that you have two threads passing through those little rings in the heddles. And therefore, you have created a space to put in your orif. There are some shitas who specifically speak out that creating batei nirim means you have two places between the beit nirim. Because what good is having two batei nirim if there's nothing that's going to be passed between them? If there are two batei nirim in the same direction, where is anything going to go? If there's one beit nir on top and one beit nir on the bottom, then nothing's going to hold. So obviously you've got to have two holes. Okay, so this is how some of the Rishonim explain it. That the beit nir is not the ring itself that we're referring to, but rather the space that is arranged for the orev thread to pass. That's the place, the beit nir is the place for the orev thread between two threads. From Rashi's Pirush in the Gemara later, even though I must say this, the writer of this book disagrees with this approach, but from Rashi's approach later in this sugya, the mashma'ut is that shtei batei nirin are significant where you have two threads in the beit nir and the other thread there ready to pull over. The only thing is that the other thread does not have to actually be placed in the beit nir to be chayav. But you can't simply set up two threads of warp in two batei nirim to do nothing and call that a malacha. You can't do anything with two warp threads. That seems to be the problem. So
you need at least three.
You need at least three. Okay, and I believe that that's the pshat that Rashi is giving in the Gemara, which is fundamentally different than the approach that he takes.
Two up and one down.
Right, exactly. But the one down, the point is that the one down, it's not your business necessarily to pass it through the heddle. Because what you've done is you've said, however you manage to get that other thread up, that's the problem of the weaver. But you have already set up a situation in which the next step would be passing through actually a weft between this warp. And that's what's important.
With two what threads?
The shuttle is the holder of the web thread. It's called the buchiyah. But there has to be thread in it. The shuttle
but
is not
does it
shuttle.
Have to be two threads that are on the same heddle?
Yes, exactly.
One
two threads on the same heddle plus a third thread that's hanging down.
Down.
Right. That's how Rashi seems to explain the Gemara later that talks about this.
Wouldn't two warp threads, and you pass something through them repeatedly, just create a string?
You don't pass through two. You'll never pass through two adjacent warp threads in the heddle. They have to be between the even threads and the odd threads.
Right.
So if you have two warp threads on a heddle, it's always either two odd threads or two even threads.
It
won't do you any good. Each heddle holds either the odd or the even.
You need two heddles.
Absolutely, yeah. Okay. So if you make two nearin, either the nearin, either using an actual professional loom, or the same thing is true if you would create two bate nearin in the kiros. Because the kiros, which is the device that smashes them down, also holds the threads separate in order to be able to work on them. That's part of the setting up of a loom. Or for that matter, forget about a loom. Suppose you're making a sifter. Suppose you're making a sieve. Both of those things are made with basket weaving. And for all intents and purposes, you're weaving. You're not weaving cloth, you're weaving reeds. You're weaving metal, but the point is you're creating a woven surface to which your flour is going to pass, or whatever it is that you're passing through your sifter. So there it's exactly the same thing. You would be doing shnei batei nirin, even though obviously there's no nirin on a sifter, but by hooking the threads into the edge of the sifter on either side, you're setting up now the possibility of passing the threads to the other side. And that's the equivalent of making shtei batei nirin in a loom. So whether it's binafa, bikavara, or if you're making a basket. Basket weaving is achieved exactly the same way. So bisal, if you do the equivalent of a sal, you would be chayav. Now after you've got your material, hatofer shtei tefirot, so if you sew two, what's it called?
Stitches,
thank you. Fakorea. You're always there for me. By Korea, I'm not at first. I mean, being in the business for many years, if you couldn't tell me that, I think you really made Aliyah. Or if you tear the area that would allow you now to sew two new stitches, you would also be chayev, assuming that that's your intent. In other words, you're tailoring, not that you're being makalka.
Is it different malacha?
Absolutely. Hatofer, Hakorea, each stage. Kiyosu Rabbi Yitzchak, when Rabbi Yitzchak came along, he read in the Mishnah, Rabbi Eliezer Omer Ha'orek Shtei Chuti B'tchila. In other words, that Rabbi Eliezer was agreeing with Rabbanan and never said anything about three that's required to get things going. And they asked him, Anant Nan Shalosh, but we learned that it's three and that it just means three threads, and he is arguing, no? Says the Gemara, this is not a problem. Habalime habikatine. Depends on the thickness of the thread. And some say that it depends in one direction, and some say it depends in the other direction. Because there's two issues that need to be taken into consideration. The chashivut, in terms of the how noticeable, how meaningful is the cloth that you're affecting. And of course the other issue is how likely it is to stick together, to hold together. Now the thinner the thread, the more likely it is to hold together with just a few threads, because they're able to be backed up tight against each other and support one another in the weave. But on the other hand, if they're really thin threads, it's not even noticeable. It's like, what's the value of it? So if you're focusing in the shiur on how long it's going to hold, then the thinner thread would require less. If you're focusing on how chashuv it is what you've done, then the thicker thread would require less. And that was the bachlokas. Amir lahaygiz, ramir lahaygiz. Amir lahaygiz, as some say in one direction, namely, alime, the thick threads require three in order to be lo sapre, not to simply unwind themselves. But two of thick threads would just fall apart, would be satre. Whereas katine, if you got thin threads, then treinami lo satre, because you could pull them up tight against each other, even two will not end up unraveling. Amila agisa. The other approach is the opposite. Katine, if you got thin threads, you need three of them in order to make your mark on the world, which is part of a malacha. So tzlata yadi, tre lo yadiya. You note three, but you don't note two. Whereas Ali Mitre Nami Yadigi. Now, the Braita says, Ha'orek Shlosha Chutim Betchila, V'Echad Al Arich Chayav, obviously, even though it doesn't attribute it to him, it must be Stama going according to the Shita of Rebbe Eliezer. And here the Chachamim are mentioned as those who are cholik on the stamp shita. The Chachamim omrim, bein mitchilat bein besof, shiuran shtei chutim. Uvisafa shtei chutim, berochav shlosha batei nirim. Now, along the, is it called the surge of the material, where you have that little mark along the edge? It's like surge. A surge, right? Okay, so along the surge of the material, what they often do is they'll put in a, I'm sure you'll notice if you've ever purchased material, along the edges, it's got like a silky edge in which the in which it's written in thread the name of the company, the type of the material, and so on. And that's called the serge. So what you do there is basically you change your warp threads so that it turns out to be a whole different look at the edge. And it's usually very thin and tight to keep it together. So what the material itself is, there's this little edging that holds it together. So now the question is, making the edging and ignoring the material, making the edge, that's equivalent to making a little ribbon. And that's how we look at it. In other words, even if you did things crazy, you left the material alone, and you manually made the edge, you'd be chayav even if it would only be 3 batei nirim wide along 2 chutim. Because you know what? Suppose you would make a little ribbon for your kid. So a little ribbon, people do this all the time. They sell these little silly bracelets, you know, with the magic bracelets. Those are the same thing. So do they have to be orange? I thought they used to work when they weren't orange. No. This is Ariga. You haven't completed anything. You're not talking about the end. You're talking about the edging. Yeah. The edging is not my kind of
patish.
No. Now, you said, Ha'orik shlosha chutim b'tchila v'echad al arik chayev. Now, that's stama, obviously, Rebbe Eliezer, right? Okay, now there's another braita that says, Tanya Idach, Ha'orik shnei chutim al hagas. 2 chutim on that which has already been woven. Via la imra, or on the surge. It's all chayev. Now that's obviously stam like the chachamim. In this braita, Rebbe Eliezer is the dissenting opinion. Rebbe Eliezer is afilu echad. If you're doing it all agas, even one, ubisafa and along the edge, shnei chutim brokav shlosh batenim chayav. Now you said how orik shnei chutim alagas v'alim rachayev. Obviously, this brayta is stamak rabbana. How usa shnei batei nirin benirin? What do you mean when you say benirin? Omer Abaye, this means tarte bebatei nira v'choda benira. Now my pirush is very simple. What Rav? I mean, there's 7 different recorded pirushim among the Rishonim as to what this Gemara means. Is extremely strange thing to say. 2 in the Beit Nir and 1 on the Nir. I believe that Rashi is giving an extremely simple explanation. What he's saying is that since the Malach is defined as Shnei Batei Nirin, what use is Shnei Batei Nirin? And that's what the Gemara is asking. When you say Benirin, what use is 2 threads that are warped threads that you can't do anything with? Therefore, the Gemara is saying it means your responsibility of the Malacha is to put in 2 threads in the Beit Nir, leaving the middle thread hanging against the Nir, and not in the Beit Nir. So the Chiyuv doesn't require 3 threads set up in Batei Nirin. 2 threads set up in Batei Nirin is enough.
On the same side.
On the same side. As long as the 3rd thread, which is the odd thread or the even thread, is hanging in between them, ready to be moved as necessary. I don't really need to program a single thread into a Beit Nir. I just lift it up manually. So there's no point in the Beit Nir. So if I wanted to make it Tzilzul Kata, I could actually make it like this. So this is therefore the minimal weave. And if it's the minimal weave, then it's also the minimal setup of a weave. That's all. Right?
Yeah, that's true.
Makes perfectly good sense. Here I've got 2 threads going in one direction. 1 thread hanging limp on the other direction, okay? If I now pass through a thread in the other direction, All I need to do is pull up the loose thread. I don't need the purpose of Bate Nirin is to deal with multiple threads at once. But I don't have multiple threads. I have a single thread. What's the point of putting it through a Bate Nirin? So put through your web thread, pull up the single warp thread, put it through again, pull down the single warp thread, put it through again, pull up the single, so on and so forth. And you got yourself a ribbon.
That's such a thin one, you only need one of them.
Exactly. You're basically making a thin ribbon. So if that's the case, if that's the shear of the Ariga, the minimum shear of Ariga, then that would be enough. So why does it say two? Because the third is all near. It's not in the bacon here. Very simple. Okay. It avoids a lot of the complex problems.
And therefore, stay batinirin is talking about three strings.
Three threads, but two batinirin, right. Bekirus. Now, by the way, if that's the case, then the explanation of the Albeck or others that learn that the Beit Nir is a reference to the distance between two adjacent, odd and even, warp threads. In other words, place to put in and out your web thread is the point, correct? So you have two holes in which it would go in and out, which is the equivalent of a full tefirah. It's saying the same thing. Because when you're talking about three threads, you have two holes. Except that Rashi is saying, but the meaning of the near is exactly what we said. It means really in the little ring. But since you've got the third thread, by definition, you have two places for your web thread. And that's what's important. Right? Now, this is extremely rational, because what we're trying to do is define a malacha that can set up a minimal requirement for weaving once I get to weaving. So you've done that. You've done that very nicely. The two threads that are very difficult to move separately, you have in a heddle, and the heddle moves them. The single thread, which is very simple to move separately, you have in your hand, and there you go. The simplest loom imaginable. Okay.
The
tefirah starts with the weave there. It's combining two weaves.
Tefirah, you go like this.
Yeah. Okay, you can look at it. If you would isolate the tefirah so that there was nothing there but the threads adjacent to the tefirah, then it would be like tefirah. So that's the shot. Tarte bebotenira, two threads going through the rings in the heddles, and the chodabanira, one thread hanging limp against the heddle that can then be moved as its own. Bekirus, my Bekirus, what is a Kirus? Omarab Mitsuvita. That's a type of Japanese car. That's a comb that is Meitsiv. It makes Yatsiv. It puts things in its place by forcing the threads up against the existing weave.
What color is this?
I don't know. Maybe it has an here.
It's a piece of wood that.
It's a comb, but it probably has, since it moves, probably has a professional name. Shouldn't be any space between one line of yes, and you'll get a loose cloth, and it'll just become all bubbly and bulky. And so.
Are these two batenirins big enough to make the baggage three fingers on my side, even a weave or something? Or a ribbon?
No, this is a ribbon. We
this
said.
A
ribbon.
Which is much smaller, right?
Yeah, but the shear of Bega to use, Megabe Tuma, is a completely different idea. I mean, you certainly want it still so caught on it and still kosher. Hatofer state tefirot. Well, what's the point of this? We had a Mishnah in which it said all the 39 melachot. It said over there, Hatofer state tefirot, as part of the 39 melachot. Why are we repeating it? I mean, I understand the Ariga, we're going into great detail. The tefirah, you don't add a word. So why do you say it? Hatzinina bavot melachot, quote, v'hatofer shtei tefirot, unquote. Okay, so what did you add? Well, you're right, I didn't add here, but I'm going to continue. And you should be kaboy l'mitnei seifa. I mean, look at the brilliant ending of the Mishnah. V'hakorea amanat l'tfor shtei tefirot. So since I wanted to say that, I also said the first part. Kortoninami hatofer. I hate to tell you this, but hakorea appeared in the first Mishnah exactly like that. You said I'm an athlete for Shetzirot back in the Mishnah. You didn't add anything. Oh, well, okay. The last part is adding though, which is not doesn't appear in our Mishnah. Mishum de Kaboyla Mishnah Sefer, which is the Mishnah coming up. which is a korea bekamoto, v'almeito. Somebody gets mad and tears his clothes on Shabbat, or he tears chas v'shalom for a mate on Shabbat. To introduce the sugya, which then leads us into the question of whether it's called mikalkel or not, to tear something when you're angry, or malakashem atzir lagufa, which we'll be dealing with today. Hakorei almanat before shteit tfirot. Heche mashkachat la, the avda hikista. Where would you want to do something like that? Well, it's very simple. Suppose you sewed it, and it was sewed in such a way that you've got a bubble. You need to stretch the material out. You can't stretch the material out until you release your stitches. So you got to pull out the stitches, pull the material, and then restitch. Very simple. So even though you're going to be tofer in the same exact area, shtei tfirot, but you have to release the original tfirot. Hakorea b'chamato. Somebody who tears because he's mad. V'almeito, or he tears on a mate. V'chol ha'makalkel, for that matter, anybody who just does something that is counterproductive is potter. Now, the question is why kriya on a mate is counterproductive. That's something we'll have to look at into the Gemara. V'ha'makalkel, ha'menat ha'takein, on the other hand, a makalkel, such as the case we had by Tvira, which the purpose of, although it's being makalka right now, but the whole, only reason I'm undoing what I'm done is in order to fix it, there always the shiur is kimitakein. Getting back to the ariga, if you wanted to make the thread originally for this ariga, there too the shiur would be what would be considered to be chashuv for use in ariga, and the shiur hamilabein, so the whitening process, v'haminapetz, the willing process, v'atzoveya, or dyeing, or tover, the spinning, is kimlo rochav asit kaful. It would be the double sit is the shiur. The sit is the distance between the etzba and the ama, so it's that wide, your forefinger and your pointing finger. And then the sita kaful is double that, which is the distance between your thumb and your first finger, which ends up to be double. Okay, the Rambam somehow gets a very different shear than that, but that's the mikubal between most of the Rishon. So all of the shiurim are the same. The aorek shnei chutim, how wide of a beged, we said, we never talked about. We just said aorek shnei chutim. I mean, shnei chutim on what? On how many nearing? You never said. And obviously, it would depend on the thickness of the thread. And actually, the shear is the cloth that comes out. What is the cloth that comes out? Kimlo hasit. The shear would be a width of cloth. In other words, you added your two threads, or according to Rabbi Eliezer, your one thread, along a width of cloth that had already been now done, or according to Rabban, it doesn't matter if it's done or not, along the shear of the seam. So even if the entire loom might have been 10 sitim long, and you went ahead and you just threw in your shuttle along a seat length, and you made two rows, you'd be high up just for the seat. Ramino. Hakorea b'chamatova avelova ameto chayav. Strange that the Braita says that someone who tears, if he's mad, or he tears as an expression of mourning, or he tears on someone who died, would be chayav. Not like our Mishnah. As a matter of fact, Alpha Bishop Mechalel Shabbat, even though it certainly was not a good idea, Yatsa Yedei Kriya, at least he doesn't have to tear another shirt, you know, he's already yotz the first one on his way to the gallows. Lokash, Habameti Alma. If it's on his own mate, meaning somebody who's hired to be Korean, so then it's not a kilkul, it's basically a tikkun. This is what he needed to do to be Yotzi the Mitzvah. But if it's on another mate, then he wasn't responsible to tear for him, and therefore it's just plain old Mikalkel. Well, but the Mishnah says, Almeto, it's Potter. I mean, isn't that, you just said it's of a matey day. Well, no, wait a minute. You can have, someone can have a matey day, who's a relative and very close to, but it's not Machayev Kriya. There's only certain relatives that are Machayev Kriya. Maybe this is his dear cousin who died. And they're like twins, but he's not Chayev to be Korea. So if it's there, it's talking about Meito, meaning somebody that he cares about very much, but he's not Mechuyev on. So therefore, Ba'anat V'lav B'nei Avelut Nino. If it's not a Chiyev, so then it's a Mekalko. The fact that he wants to express his emotions by being Mekalko is not going to be Mechayev on Shabbos. But wait, if his cousin was a Chacham, he was Chayev to be Korea. So Ichacham Uchiyuv HaMechayev, D'tanya Chacham Shemait HaKol Krovav. Everybody is his relative. HaKol Krovav, Sakadag, all of a sudden everybody's his relative. Yeah, of course. You know, my uncle was the, no. Ella, what it means is, Ema HaKol Kikrovav. Everyone is like a relative, meaning HaKol Kor Imalav. Everyone needs to be Korea, they're Beged. HaKol Kol Tzimalav. Everybody needs to uncover their shoulders, which was the way that they were further Korea in those days. HaKol Mevarim Alav Rechava. Everybody takes the Sudat Avara in the open Rechava, which is what they did on the way back from the funeral. Well, guess what? His cousin wasn't a Chacham. No Tzimit Alav Chacham. Okay, so you didn't need to be Korea. But wait! If he's an Adam Kosher, you're Chayav to be Korea on an Adam Kosher. Why does a person's child die in their childhood? So that he should cry on the loss of an Adam Kasher. What? Are you crazy? We're making him a guarantor. You know, well, we'll take a couple of kids just to give you a good lesson. Don't you? But that's insane. I mean, obviously, that's it. The person who doesn't value life. So someone who doesn't care about the death of an Adam Kasher can chas v'shalom lose his own. Anyone who cries over the loss of just a simple man, but who's an Adam Kasher, doesn't have to be a chacham. But he will be forgiven all of his avonot. So his cousin, therefore, should have been Tornan. So it's a tikkun. Uh-oh. The only explanation is his cousin wasn't no Adam Kasher. Oh, he was a bad cousin. But still, if he was standing there when his cousin expired, even if he wasn't an Adam Kasher, it would have to be Korea. Because he declared Bishat Yitziat Neshama Chiyuv Mechayve. Tanya Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar Omer, Ha'omeid Alameit B'Sha'at Yitziat Neshama Chayav Likroa. Someone who is standing at a bedside of one who dies has to tear. The Gemara understands this refers to anybody, even if he's not an Adam Kasher. Ha'lamazed Domeh. You know what that's like? It's like watching a Sefer Torah being burned. Because as Rashi says, as long as this guy was alive, he had all of the potential of basically being a walking Sefer Torah. In his heart is all of the inyanim of the Torah. No matter how simple a man he is, the simplest Yisrael is that way. So his cousin, if he had been standing there, then he anyway should have torn his begadim. There's an incredible maral that brings a riot from here, that if you see someone going to learn in yeshiva, you have to be Korean on him. Because this is the same thing. Until he went to yeshiva, he could have learned Kolat Torah Kula. But now that he's going, he'll never know anything. And so therefore, it's the equivalent. I don't think he thought he was being sarcastic.
That's when you only learn.
What's that?
That's when you only learn three vowels a month.
Yeah, exactly. Those kind of yeshiva. He was a yeshiva that learned through shas and taught people correctly and that taught them to use their minds instead of quoting all types of people. And, you know. Anyway, so what about this guy's cousin? Guess what? He wasn't standing there. That's the case. Okay. So here it is. Our Mishnah is talking about a guy who's not a relative that's Bechayev Kriya, but who is a relative. Who's not a Chacham, and is also not an Aron Kosher. But who wasn't there. The guy who was staring wasn't present Bishat Yitziyat Shama. Okay, fine, you've explained the difference between the Mishnah's Meito and the Braita's Meito. So the Braita's Meito was Meit that he's Chayev, On Kriya, the Mishnah's debate that he isn't time on Kriya. But you have to explain the contradiction about the other part. He's angry. Our mission says if he's angry, he's butter. The Brayta says, Bechamato, he's high. How can you explain that? Ah, false or not a kasha. Chamato, Chamato, nami lo kasha. Ha Rabbi Yehuda, ha Rabbi Shimon. According to Rabbi Yehuda, what's melakasha in a tzrikala gufa chayav aleha? I mean, obviously, I'm serving no purpose whatsoever in the object of my kriya. So it's in a tzrikala gufa, right? All I'm doing is I'm tearing to make myself feel better. But, I mean, that's nothing to do with the object. So if you hold the melakasha in a tzrikala gufa, you're chayav on kufa, then I understand why the Mishnah would say that you're chayav. But according to Rabbi Shimon, who says melakasha in a tzrikala gufa, patur aleha, then you should be patur, because even though you may feel great about it, certainly that's not the purpose of the fundamental malacha of Kriya, which was in order to be mitakein something that had bunched up. This has nothing to do with that. It's just trying to get your emotions out. Now, wait a second here, but even according to Rabbi Yehuda, who says malacha in tikkun gufa chayed, when you need to be achieving something, you're being mikalkel, because I mean, what good is coming of this? That's only been mitakein. He says you're chayev in lachin tzrikala gufa. Mikalkel, mishamatli, Rabbi Yehuda, what do you mean? You're doing a lot of good for your emotional state, aren't you? That's good. I nami mitakeinu. The gavi nachat ruach li yitzro. His yitzhar is feeling much better. So he got it all out, you know.
That's what you get from tearing. Imagine what would happen if you kill the guy.
Exactly.
I mean, you know.
But wait, a primal scream. Ukehai gavra mishari, you call that being mitakein? Teaching your Yetzirah that he deserves a little bit of finessing and you know, once in a while a good tear and a couple of bullets or something? That's not a good idea. That's being mikalkel, because Vatanya, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar Omer, Mishum Chilfa bar Agra, Sheomar Mishum Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, Hamikarea degadav bechamato. Somebody gets mad and tears his clothing. Or Hamishaber kelav bechamato. He picks up a glass and throws it. Or Hamifazer motav bechamato. Now, these are the kinds of friends I would like.
Yeah.
Somebody who opens his wallet and throws his money around and says, to the winds, I say! Never happened, Rich. I've been hanging around for years. Never happened. You told me when you do the exercises. And I pick up a couple of shkalim here and there. For all intents and purposes, this guy is a goner. He's already, he might as well be in the church. That's how it all begins, you know. One day it's terrier begunny. And until in the end he tells him, why did you already go? And at that point he's so used to, well, okay, just to make you happy. So therefore, in training your Yetzer this way, you're not doing your tikkun, you're doing your kilku. So even according to, if you hold Rabbi Yehuda, you're higher, but that's only where it's a tikkun. It's a kilku, malachashen tzrikala gufa. And we can bring a raya from a pasuk. I'm Rabbi Yehuda, micro, where do we see this in the pasuk? The pasuk says, lo yeh becha elza. So what's the difference between the lo yeh becha elzar, lo tishtachave? But one seems more intimate. Lo yeh becha, ha! Becha means internal. There shall be no alien god inside of you. Now, somebody who's saying the devil made me do it has got an alien god inside that he's listening to. And that alien god is saying, tear, and he tears, go for her, and he goes. Now all of that is this alien god inside. He's not interested in all of this. So because of that,
can you use that in court? You know,
exactly. In cases you can.
There's some.
My Yetzer Hara made me do it.
I was just angry last night. They let him off.
Okay, so Ezo El Zar Sheyesh Begufo Shel Adam. What alien god dwells within? Aviomer Ze Yetzer Hara. Now. It says here, two steps, lo yebechayel zar. But if you allow that God to rule, lo tishtachav al nechar, the next step is the church. You're only one step away from that slippery slope. And therefore, it would be a very bad thing to tear your begonim on Shabbat. So therefore, you would be a mikalkel, not a mitakeh. It's talking about, says the Gemara, lo tzricha, it is mitakeh. How is it mitakeh? He's not really mad, but he wants his kids to think he's about to kill them. So therefore, in order to get the household in terror, he's as cool as a cucumber, you see, but if his kids were seized as cool as a cucumber, they can get away with murder. He's got to go through the motions. Like Rabbi Yehuda, when he needed to go through the motions, he was shalef matzpayata. He would take out it's either the serge or would be the basting threads from his begotten that he could put right back in. It would look like he was tearing along the seam, wasn't really tearing anything significant, but he scared them. Rabbi Bar Yaakov would keep a collection of broken dishes, and then he would slam the broken dishes against the wall. Everybody would think, oh my God, he's breaking the dishes, and so on, so they could get really scared. And Rav Sheshes had an idea that we were going to use for the Daf Yomi, and he was Romile La'amte Munina Aresha. He would pour out the aquarium on the maid's head, and that would teach her a lesson. It wasn't actually the aquarium, it was the goo, the sauce from the fish.
The brine.
So we had somebody in the yeshiva, one of the rabbis would keep a little squirt gun filled with the gefilte fish brine. If you fell asleep! And Rebaba was Tova Nachdama, he would take the tops of pots that were no longer in use and break them. This is a good thing to show. Yeah, I mean, the Rambam brings a person should pretend to be angry. Lemaisa, the Mefarshim bring not to do this because other people don't know that you're breaking broken dishes. And they can actually think that you're really a nut.
This great rabbi can do that.
Exactly. What can't I do?
And this isn't
that's why it's not a
made till Emily is Sarah.
Well, it's also a question how. I mean, it's obviously a cultural. In other words, if this is the normal reaction,
Spartan can get away with it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. There's a certain mode of behavior that's expected. If you're angry, if you're not going to do that, we know you're just
angry. You're not really angry.
The truth is, this is a major machlokas rishon. Almost everyone, except the Rambam, learns this is why it's not a makalko. The Rambam learns this moral issue has nothing to do with makalko. Come on, let's be serious. You feel better? So it's mitakein. What kind of business? But it's morally wrong. Yeah, great. So on some type of a level up in the sky, it's a makalko. I mean, we're talking about things that are functional for people, and right now there's a great way to get rid of it's therapeutic, exactly. So why is therapy, says the Rambam, why is therapy any different than daring on a mate? I mean, they both have their purposes. So this is therapeutic. You could say you disagree with the therapy, but Lamaisa, it's therapeutic. Therefore, the Rambam says the Gemara was never questioning that it's called Mikalko. When it asks, I got the Mishori. I mean, is that the point? The Rambam was just concerned about, according to Rambam, the Gemara was just concerned about the presentation. So it's saying, and I'll leave it to Rabbi Shimon, without saying whether it's good or bad and so on. So it makes it clear, that's all. But La Halacha makes absolutely no difference. If you're doing something therapeutic, it doesn't matter whether it's a good therapy or a bad therapy.
Otherwise,
that would be like saying somebody who smokes on Shabbos is Potter because it's Makal.
Or even the final, say the kaka on last Masakti, then you say no, but it's never is because it's Masakti. It's Masakti of a symbol of it.
Continues the Gemara getting back to the crying over the death of a kosher individual. It's interesting, we spoke about this yesterday in the keynote, that someone who cries over the death of any person who's a kosher person, HaKadosh Baruch Hu counts those tears and keeps it in his innermost chambers. Shenemar, because we find that Dovan HaMelech refers to Nodi Safarta Ata, you keep track, you count the pain that I go through. Simad dimati benotcha, put my tears into your container. Halo besifratcha, keep the count in your innermost account books. Omre b'yudam harab, kol amitatzel behespedo shel chacham. Somebody who speaks casually, doesn't really put his heart into the hesped of a chacham, ro'i lekovro b'chayav, is suitable to be buried alive. That's the probable correct pirush which the Meshech Chachma gives, is should have been buried in the lifetime of the chacham, rather than vice versa. Because since the death of the chacham didn't matter to him, shema v'yikburu oto b'gvul nachlato, b'timnat serach, sher bahar Ephraim, mitzafon lahar ga'ash. That's weird. North of the volcano? Timnat Serach in Har Ephraim is north of the volcano. And note, doesn't say anything yet. Tosus points out, Vayivku oto shloshim yom or whatever. Doesn't say anything about it. It's a Tiberigan. Yoshua. Sounds like, you know, okay, Yoshua's gone. Yeah. Well, let's get rid of the body. Well, no discussion about any impact like we find with the earlier leaders. So therefore, we have to understand that when it says a volcano, it means melamed shiragash aleihem ahar lahorgan. They were attacked by the mountain because they hadn't done anything to mark the hesped. Omre priya barav, omre geor, kol mitatzel behespedo shel chacham, eino ma'arich yamin. Mida keneged mida. Look, somebody doesn't care about the meaning of a life, doesn't deserve a long life himself. And you'll say, okay, but I mean, you know, life is life. But that's mida keneged mida. And that's HaKadosh Baruch Hu's anhaga, we know. Shinemar b'sa'a se'a b'shachat ribena, which we darshan b'sa'a se'a. In other words, mida keneged mida. One se'a for another se'a. That a person's own appreciation of life is what defines the length of his own life. So why should anybody care about him if he doesn't care about lives himself? How can you say, no, that doesn't make sense, because you're saying that the people that were mitatzel b'espedosh or Yehoshua didn't have a long life. But it says b'feirish in the pasuk that they did. V'yavdu ha'am et Hashem kol yimei Yehoshua v'chol yimei hazakenim asher he'erichu yamim acharei Yehoshua. Now according to you, if the Hargash was going to eat them up because they were mitatzel, then how did they have a long life, huh? What do you do about that? I think that's pretty good. I got you right from the very pasuk about Yehoshua where they were mitatzel. Ah, he says, note, it says, they had ribui yamim. Huh? They never lived out the year. The same thing about ribui shanim. They had a lot of extra days. Ah, oh, come on. Leman yirbu yamecha. That means you'll have a lot of days, but you won't have years. Is that right? So, let's see it inside. Hey, Babloy. Listen, Mr. Bubble Spick. Yamim herichu. Can't you read a pasuk? It says, yamim, not shanim. So he says, elami atalaman yirbu yamechem vimei b'nechem. Also means, well, your kids will live a couple of days. Velo shanim. That's the context. The context is bracha. Obviously, bracha is shiny. I mean, if the whole idea is I'm trying to say that you're going to have a long life, I can use the word ribui yamim. V'yomer Rebbe Chiya Barav, Omer Rebbe Yochanan. Echad min achim shemet. One member of a family dies. Yidagu kol ha'achim kolam. All the brothers should worry that entire year that they're next in line. Echad min chabura shemet. Someone from a group who dies, the entire group has to recognize that their impact of that death is upon all of them, and therefore who knows if the gzeira isn't against them all. Amrila demet gadol, v'amrila demet katan. Some say that's dafka if the oldest died, because that's the, once midas adin is shalet on the top, it's certainly going to be shalet that's on the bottom. Others learn just the opposite. The klal always begins from the bottom. So when you're dealing with klalar, but then you're matchilim and akatan. Unfortunately, here in the Rova, we've seen a little bit too much of that that anhaga. Katavot echad nochikon Rabbi Yisrael in the terem of chayev and hakamim putri. Om Rabbi Yochanan Mishum Rabbi Yosef ben Zimra. מנין ללשון נודריק ומן התורה שנאמר כי עם המון גויים נתתיך עם נתתיך לאומות בחור נתתיך באומות המון חביב נתתיך באומות מלך נתתיך לאומות ותיק נתתיך באומות נאמן נתתיך לאומות רבי יוחנן לידי אמר אנוכי נודריק אנא נפשי כתיבת יהבת רבנן אמרי אמינו נעימה כתיבה יהבת איגרי אמרי אנוכי למפריע יהיבה כתיבה נאמן נאמריה דבר רבי נתן אמרי כי יראת הדרך מנגדי, יראה ראתה נתתה. תבר רבי שמותנה, קר מל, קר מלא. רבי אחר ביעקב, הוא אמרו, כללני, כללני מרצת, נוג'קן, נואף ומואבי, הוא רוצח, הוא צורר, הוא תואבה, הוא. רבי אחר ביצח, הוא אומר, מה נדבר, מה נצטדק? נכונים אנחנו, צדיקים אנחנו, תאורים אנחנו, דקים אנחנו, קדושים אנחנו. הכותב שתי עודיות בשתי העלמות, אחת שחרית ואחת בין הרביים, רבי גמליאל מחייב וחכמים פותרים ומייקה מפגר רבי גמליאל סמר אין ידיעה לחצי שיעור רבי נצבר יש ידיעה לחצי שיעור רבי ליעזר אומר על רק שלושה חוטים בתחילה ואחת על הריק חייב וחכמים אומרים בין בתחילה בין בסוף שירו שני חוטים עושה שתי בתי נירין בנירין או בקירוס ובנופר בקבורה בסל חייב התופר שתי תפירות והקוראה מנת לתפור שתי תפירות כי עד רבי יצחק תני שתיים, איוון אנטן שלוש, לא קשה, הבעלים היה בקטיני, אמר לה הגיס ואמר לה הגיס, אמר לה הגיס, אלים את לטה לא סטרי, טרי סטרי, קטיני איבן טרי לא סטרי, ואמר לה הגיס, הקטין את לטה ידי, טרי לא ידי, אלים טרי נעמי ידי. תניה, האורק שלושה חוטים בתחילה, ויחד על האורק חייב, וכחומם אומרים בין בתחילה בין זה בסוף, שיורן שני חוטים, ובשפה שני חוטים ברוחב שלושה בתי נירים. הלמה זה דומה לאורק צלצו קוטה, שני חוטים ברוך ושלושה בתים נירים, ואורק שלושה חוטים בתחילה ואחד על אורק חייב, סתם רק רב אליעזר. תנידה, אורק שני חוטים על הגס ועל האימרה חייב, רב אליעזר אומר אפילו אחד, ובשפה שני חוטים ברוך ושלושה בתים נירים חייב, הלמה זה דומה לאורק צלצו קוטה, שני חוטים ברוך ושלושה בתים נירים, אורק שני חוטים על הגס ועל האימרה חייב, סתם רק רבונק. Also shnei bati nirin, my benirin, am rabbi atarti bati nira, v'choda benira, b'kirus, my b'kirus, am aram mitzvita. V'atofer shtei tvirot, atanya bavot melahot already atofer shtei tvirot. That's because v'shum b'kabayim mitnei seifa. Ha-korea am not before shtei tvirot. So katani nami atofer, yeah, except the korea nami tenina. Bavot melahot. Ela v'shum b'kabayim mitnei seifa, korea b'chamato v'ameto, v'shum achi katani atofer shtei tvirot. הקוראה אמנת לתפור שתי תפורות, איך המשכחת לה? דאב דקיקיסטה. הקוראה בחמתו ועומתו וכל המקלקל נפטורי. והמקלקל אמנת לתקן, שיעורו כמתקן. שיעור המילה בין והמנפץ והצובע והטובע כמלוא רוח הפסית הכפול. האורג שני חוטים, שיעורו כבולי הסית. רבינו, הקוראה בחמתו באבלו ועומתו חייב אף פי שמחלל אשר שבת יצא ידי קריאה. לא קשה, ומת ידיה, ומת ידיה, ומאי ומת עוגת, אני, יא, 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 מת ידיה, ודבר נחלם בני אבינות נינו. וחכם הוא חיוב ומחייב, יתניה, חכם שנית הכל קרובה, והכל קרובה, צריך כדאי תלמה, הכל כקרובה, והכל קוראים עליו, והכל חוצים עליו, הכל מברים עליו ברחבה, לא צריך דלב חכם הוא. בריאלם קשר הוא חיוב ומחייב, וזה מבני מה מתים בנם ומנותם של אדם, כשהם קטנים, כדי שיבכה ויתאבל, על אדם כשר, כדי שיבכה, ארבונה שק ומנה, אז מפני שלא בכה ויתאבל על אדם כשר. שכל הבוכה על אדם כשר, מוכלים לו על כל אמונותיו, בשביל הכבוד שעשה לו, וצריך את הלב אדם כשר. אוקיי, בריקוי בשעת יציאת נשמה, חיוב ומחי, ונתנו שמן העזר אומר, עומר על המת, בשעת יציאת נשמה חייב לקרוע, הלו מה זה דומה לספר תורה שני שרפה? לא צריך את הלוקאי בשעת יציאת נשמה. אינך מתו, ואולי גם אין סובב חמתו, החמתו אצלו קש. חמתו, החמתו נעמי לו קש, הרבי ידע רבי שמן. הרבי ידע אמר לא כשאין צריך לגוף החייב עליה, הרבי שמן אמר לא כשאין צריך לגוף הפוטר עליה. Yeah, but still, even Rabbi Yehuda is only mechayev mitakein. I mean, not a mekalkel, misha mitla. Om Ravo, and I'm not mitakein. The kavi nachat ruach liyitzro. Why, that's called a good thing. I have the mishori, Yatanya. Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, and Mishum Shufa Baragra, and Mishum Yehuda ben Nuri. I'm a kareya begadav v'chamato. I'm a shaber kelav v'chamato. I'm a fazer meotav v'chamato. יהיה בינך לקרוא בין עבוד הזורה, שכח אומנתו שיצר הרע, היום אומר לו עושה כך,
ואומר רבי ברב אמר רבי יוחנן, אחד מן האחים שמת, ידאגו כל האחים כולם. אחד מני חבורה שמת, תדאג כל החבורה כולה. אמר לו דמת גדול, ואמר לו דמת קטן.
Anger